It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee, Andy, and Alex are all here. Quite a debate coming up over this Bloomberg story. Apple denies it. Amazon denies it. I think there's some merit to it. Apparently, I'm the only one. It's coming up next. Also, 12.0.1 and what it fixes. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 631, recorded Tuesday, October 9th, 2018. Talk to the pan. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Toto Washlet. Upgrade a once mundane trip to the bathroom into a spa-like experience with Washlet. To learn more and for special savings, go to wayfair.com/MacBreak and enter the promo code MacBreak at checkout. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website at wordpress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month, and you'll get 15% off any new plan at wordpress.com/MacBreak. And by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest Apple news, and there is some interesting stuff to talk about today. Fortunately, the Mac Break team is fully assembled. Batteries not included. From imore.com, all the way from Montreal, Renee Ritchie. Happy Thanksgiving, Renee.
Thank you so much, Leo. So much news. It's felt like a month has passed already, but it's only been a week.
There's a lot to talk about this week.
Well, I know, so much.
We'll get to it. Did you have turkey for Thanksgiving? What are you doing? What do you Canadians do for Thanksgiving?
So you basically just took our entire Thanksgiving and replicated it south of the border. So I think the ham might be unique to you, but all the turkey and stuffing and stuff like that.
We don't do ham. Just Leo does ham.
Okay, Leo does ham.
So it's turkey, cranberry sauce,
yes,
stuffing,
yes. Sweet potatoes,
mashed potatoes,
yeah.
Sweet
potatoes.
I don't
think we put marshmallows on sweet potatoes. No. That might not be a Canadian thing.
That's a disgusting thing. If you're going to do that, might as well go full Waldorf. maybe green beans with almonds sliced, thinly sliced almonds.
We did Brussels sprouts and broccoli, but
lovely,
you know, whatever green floats your boat.
Whatever green. Yep. Now I'm hungry. That sounds
me too.
Great. Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving. Also here, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core.
It seems very early to be talking about Thanksgiving, but that's the way we are. We like to get way ahead of it.
The Canadians
start making plans.
Do it early.
Yeah, because it freezes here earlier.
It's colder there.
You have to harvest now, Lindsay. Yeah. You have to harvest now.
But I don't know if I agree with his contention that they gave us Thanksgiving. It feels like it might have gone the other way.
I thought
we had a month head start, Leo.
We have pilgrims.
Yeah.
Squanto.
We crossed the land bridge and walked down first. You were cold
okay.
before that.
All right, all right. You got it there.
I'm staying out of that one.
also joining us, Andy Anatko from Public Radio in Boston, WGBH, anatko.com. Hey, Andrew.
Hello. And yeah, now I wish we could delay for a half an hour because I opted for the late breakfast as opposed to lunch today. And now after having talked about like Thanksgiving and ham and stuff, I'm...
Yeah, I had mentioned before the show that I'm ordering a 14-pound corn cob smoked Harrington's ham, and I cook it very slow. I actually prefer that to turkey.
That's fine.
It's not traditional though, Renee. Don't think we Americans do that normally.
Wikipedia to the rescue. It says that the first Thanksgiving in North America might have been as far north as Baffin Island, Leo. So
please, Baffin Island, my. Some wag, probably Ambrose Bierce, said eternity is a ham and two people.
Oh.
Well, Google had its announcement today. I don't know if there's anything to talk about on Mac Break Weekly. There's a new Pixel 3 phone. I will be getting it in 9 days. Mm-hmm. It's roughly the same, you know, it's a little less than an iPhone XS. Google showed off a lot of interesting camera stuff, though. Of course, they were the first, I think, to do this HDR Plus thing where you take multiple images and you combine them in an interesting way to get a better image. They say they can even do it for zooming.
That was super interesting with the shake of the optical image stabilization to pull multiple different bits of data and combine them all together to make a better, because they don't have optical zoom. They don't have multiple cameras. Like I think Huawei has 3 and some of them have 12 now.
Right.
They still only have 1. So they're doing it with computational photography, which is super fascinating.
I thought that was very interesting. They're also going to, they have portrait mode, but you can also defocus the person. I guess I would want to do that, but you could, as well as bring the background focus back and forth. They also have best picture. I think Samsung has done that, but I was never impressed with Samsung's implementation.
Top shot.
Yeah, I expect Google to do a better job. The idea is that as soon as you raise the camera, it's taking pictures. And they had a great montage of pictures taken just a second too late. That was really good. So we'll keep our eye peeled. No Pixel Buds. They're going to do a new slate, a new tablet. And, you know, there's a question there. It's going to be $599. Is it aimed at the iPad? Is it aimed at the Surface? Or is it somewhere in between? Because it runs Chrome
OS. It's got an Intel processor, which was really curious to me.
Yeah. All the way from M3, i5 to i7, all core 8th generation.
Well, because without getting too heavy into it on an Apple podcast, it already can run Chrome OS and Android apps, and they've been working with developers to make sure the Android apps converted for the tablet size Chromebook don't stink. So that's 2 software libraries. It can also run Linux, any package that's been compiled for Debian Linux. So you can just basically drag it onto the desktop, double click on it, it will open and install. And they have also been filing with Microsoft for compatibility, for certification for Windows 10 compatibility. And there are lots of hooks and mentions of Windows 10 compatibility modes in developer betas that have been dropping. So it could be interesting. That kind of would explain why they have versions like mobile style Intel processors for like $599 and not a whole lot of storage for people who literally just want a Chromebook. To people who, once, if all of this gets announced and it really works well, $1,600 or $1,000 or $1,200 for an i5 or an i7 CPU and 256 gigs of storage, that might be a very interesting purchase for somebody who wants a Chromebook, but they also need to have like a regular notebook for times when they travel and they've got that one thing that requires a Windows, like an actual Windows desktop app. It could be really interesting.
Did they have to remove the headphone jack just to fit the Intel silicon inside there? Is there a story?
No, they did it just to piss me off. I can't. That's stupid. I just tweeted this out that there's no possible excuse.
Something like that.
Did you hear the explanation they gave Dieter? Because that was amazing. He asked them on the video. We believe that people have Bluetooth now. We want to go all in.
No. They're going kicking and screaming, at least in some quarters. Well,
I bet that if we checked with Chinese distributors, that headphone jack, the price of that headphone jack must be like $72 per 10,000 units now.
Somebody's got the license on that.
It's like, why? I just don't know why they would. It's even kind of insulting that they would say there was a rational reason why they decided to do it. It's like, no, I will still maintain that, especially on a tablet or a notebook, it's an anti-consumer move. I agree with you.
And of course, we got new iPads coming out later this month. Are you still of the opinion, Renee, that there will not be an event?
No, I think I've never said there won't be an event. I think when there is a new design, it behooves them to have an event because they do a way better job setting expectations and explaining the design than when they leave it to a bunch of
overly busy
journalists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is going to be, they're going to do more rumors along the lines of they're going to do Face ID and
edge to edge,
4K HDR video. Yeah. USB-C is interesting. I still find that hard.
Please, Apple, call it the number 2 pencil. I beg of you.
Do you think they'll abandon the headphone jack and the iPad? Then Andy just went ballistic.
I mean, there's no space concerns in the iPad, and a lot of pro audio users really love the headphone jack. One of the problems with the USB-C is that a lot of people have to put it under the display, and then a lot of the stuff takes up space. But that's a phone, a millimeter concern in a phone. And a tablet, you have room for these giant speakers and stuff. So if they do it, I mean, I'll be sad, but it can't be for the same reason as they do it on a phone.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out. It'll be presumably in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Traditionally, it's been around the week of the 24th.
You don't want it to be later, right? Because you want to get it in the stores before the end of the year.
Yeah, and the orders and everything. But the only thing that's weird this year is that you have the iPhone XR going live around the same time. And last year, the iPhone X was later. So I don't know how the timing is going to work out, but it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Also, they like to say that Apple tends to shut down like early for the holidays. And so it is part of the culture that we would rather not have people. We would not have something big in play that we need to keep following up on in terms of communications, in terms of engineering, in terms of all web stuff as late as like December 1st or 2nd.
One thing I did find interesting about the Google announcement was that now that Facebook, I guess, yesterday talked about their screen, you know, their portal, as well as, which I think might have been a preemptive strike because Google's announcing theirs today. And of course, you have Amazon, Apple. Now, this leaves Apple behind again.
Without a screen.
You know, where they don't have a screen, which I do think is compelling. I think that we have an Amazon show in the kitchen, and it's nice. And I have to admit, we mostly just talk to it. We don't really.
Now here's the interesting thing. And I see this doesn't have a camera, the Google one, whereas obviously the Facebook one does.
I think you got to be out of your mind at this point to put a Facebook camera in your house.
Not just a Facebook camera, a Facebook camera that's basically a pan tilt zoom that can look anywhere in the room.
A virtual pan tilt zoom.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it follows you. It can look around. That's cool, but boy, that really would be great if you wanted to spy on people.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just curious timing because it's right after they disclosed hundreds of thousands of new data breaches. Yeah. It's just
well, of course, I bought two. Yep. And the only thing that griped me is in order to buy them, I had to reactivate my Facebook account. You have to have a Facebook account to use it.
Yeah, it's such a weird product, too. It's because the Amazon product and the Google product, that they've had the smart displays using the Google Assistant from third parties months ago. I've had one in my living room for 2 or 3 months. And those smart screens do really interesting active things. It really is like a hands-free computer, whereas Facebook is a Scala plus Facebook Messenger. And this is a lot nice. But it's not really integrating with the screen as much. It's going to be great. It's going to be a great gift because as for all the stuff that we harangue about Facebook, it is the easiest way for an elderly aunt or an elderly parent or grandparent to talk to the grandkids because that's the standard that they can easily use. If you buy
that's
one
what scares
for your
me.
Grandma. Yeah, I know. but I'm wondering how many grandmas there are who are going to be able to use this. So,
well, here's the funniest page in this portal announcement, portal.facebook.com, private by design. And the design is you can clip something over the camera. Yeah.
But that essentially makes it the same as if you've already got a Google Home or you're thinking about Amazon or whatever, you know, those are all the same.
You know, can you do all the Echo show stuff? Like, can I say I want to see my doorbell or can I
doesn't it hand off like anything that the Facebook AI doesn't do specifically for Facebook it hands off to Scala to do,
but it's unclear
what it sounded like.
Okay.
I was talking to somebody over the weekend, excuse me, yesterday about it, and they didn't seem to think that it was doing as it would give you the full feature stack that you would get from an Amazon product.
That's the impression I got. Yeah, I did like the reading to you though. It will if you want to read, see, you might like this, Alex. If you want to read to the kids, you can. It has special stories, and you can become the big bad wolf because it will put wolf stuff on you when you do that part of it. That's kind of cool.
Marquez, do you remember Marquez's video when he had the Samsung speaker ask the Google speaker to do things?
Oh boy,
that's sort of what this reminds me of.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's anybody who's smart is not going to trust this. It's going to be like, oh, and we have this wonderful new choose your own adventure with your kids. Here's a demo of it. And then the big bad wolf decided to go and buy his favorite candy bar.
Yeah,
Is your favorite candy bar the Snickers bar?
What was the street you grew up on? Plus your first pet's name.
Yeah. Worries me a little bit. Anyway, I ordered one because we got to look at it. I also ordered all the Google stuff, and it's been an expensive couple of days.
I can't order it. I keep adding it to the cart. When I go to the cart, it says your cart is empty. It's maddening over and over again.
The portal? Maybe they don't offer
the Google
it.
The Google stuff.
Yeah. Maybe they don't offer it in Canada yet.
They do. It's on the Canadian. I'm going to keep trying. Maybe they're just having Google having server problems is how you can tell. You know, it's a very Google centric day.
The one thing I was going to say about that, though, is I think that what's interesting is that Apple's kind of the last one to possibly do a screen if they ever do a screen. And, you know, they got their speaker that they're really excited about. But they're the one company that I would feel like, oh, I don't feel that bad about having the screen in my house because they're so privacy oriented, whether it's all private or not. I mean, The other ones, you always feel like you're going to be, people are going to be looking at you.
Well, let's talk
stuff.
About privacy, because the big story of the week, and I would love to get your take on this, the big hack from Bloomberg Businessweek came out on Thursday, claiming that China put a tiny chip on motherboards coming from Supermicro that are used everywhere. We use them because they were Amazon discovered
the
them
right?
before they bought the Elemental. They wanted to check for the security.
According to Bloomberg,
again, everything we say will be according to Bloomberg Businessweek. These Elementals are everywhere, from the Mormon Church to the Department of Defense.
I own 20 of them.
Yeah. Do you own any of the old Supermicro based? Because all of ours are, we traded that in for Amazon. I got
some older ones.
Bring in one and we'll take it apart. We'll see if we can find that chip. Seriously? Well, okay. So I'll complete the story. The next day, Amazon, Apple, the Chinese government all say BS. It didn't happen. Apple was very aggressive in its denial.
Apple, who barely ever answers press inquiries and answers them in the tersest way possible when it does answer them, put out pages of retort.
Yeah, and here's the letter they wrote to the members of Congress who inquired about it, the Energy Committee, the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. We were struck by the fact that the gravity and magnitude of the claim seemed to be undermined by their uncertainty around key details. Nevertheless, we worked tirelessly to ascertain whether these claims were true, or failing that, if anything even like them was true. In the end, our internal investigations directly contradict every consequential assertion made in the article, some of which we note were based on a single anonymous source, although we should point out the article itself had 17 anonymous sources. Well, that doesn't surprise me, because if you knew this and you talked to Bloomberg Businessweek, you're not going to give me your name, or you'd be in a small room in the Pentagon today.
This letter was signed by the head of InfoSec at Apple, which is unusual, too.
Yeah, I mean, so one thing some people claimed is maybe the Apple PR department didn't know, but this guy would for sure know. Apple's never found malicious chips.
And they had Bruce Sewell
right.
comment, too. But here's the thing, is that for a publicly traded company to be so assertive puts themselves at incredible risk of lawsuits and SEC violations and everything else. For them to come out, and a publicly traded company to come out and say this, and have all of them say it, is they're risking a lot to say that.
Look at the Department of Homeland Security's Saturday announcement. We currently have no reason to doubt statements from companies that have denied this.
Throw that one away.
I don't throw it away, because to me, that's hedging.
If there were that many Supermicro things that were sent in, because this has to be part of a fab.
We will know sooner or later, because you and others have these Elemental motherboards.
And I think that, but the thing is, if I was Bloomberg, I would have found that first.
They didn't find one.
Not a single. We're talking about thousands of processors, thousands of Supermicros that are floating around here with this infamous chip that.
But
they
then
didn't
you've
one.
Got to explain.
I would not have created this. I would not have written this, or at least not published it until I had a board.
But 17 sources is a lot of sources
when they're anonymous.
And this Bloomberg Businessweek is not. Fly-by-night operation.
I know, but
they've been working on this for a year.
And without someone coming on the record, I have this issue and no board.
No one is going to go on the record. You'd be in jail. I swear to God, no one's going to go on the record on this. No one is going to go on the record. What may happen, and what I hope will happen, and I expect will happen, is somebody who has one of these motherboards finds this chip. And by the way, this isn't
not that chip. That's the wrong chip.
This isn't the chip. That's the that's another statement, by the way, by the one person who was quoted by name in it. A security researcher said, you know, it doesn't smell right, because I talked to Jordan Robertson, one of the journalists who wrote this story. And a lot of the stuff that I told him was last year was regurgitated word for word. He said, this is a security expert named Joe Fitzpatrick said, I would never do it this way, frankly. A hardware implant's too easy to discover. It's much simpler just to do firmware modifications and so forth.
He also said that he doesn't work for a nation state, and it would be highly unlikely a nation state would implement something that's the exact same way that he sort of off the cuff explained to a reporter how it might work.
Well, I don't find that convincing either. So the question remains, is Bloomberg lying, Alex? Is that what you're saying? Or is it sloppy reporting?
I think it's sloppy reporting. I think that they're gonna. This is gonna damage their brand, and I think people are gonna lose their jobs. You know, like if it was true, they should have waited until they had evidence. You know, they should have waited until they had a board. If there's thousands of these boards around, I mean, if one of these boards exists, I bought Supermicros in the time frame that they're talking. Many
this is
of
2015.
Them.
So do you have Supermicro based elementals from 2014, 2015?
Absolutely.
Well, I think you owe us.
I'll bring one in.
I'll send it to iFixit.
I'll send an elemental.
iFixit is pretty good at identifying chips.
Yep. With their scanners.
ChipWorks. Actually, it's ChipWorks that often does the work.
I actually have an elemental that I'm not very happy with. So I, you know, it's old, seen a lot of miles. We could send one to iFixit. If you give me somewhere to go, I'll send it out and they can look at it and see if they.
Can you imagine if this is the Red Team 3 episode of the newsroom just played out?
It's hard to imagine the scenario here. Is possible that the U.S. government played Bloomberg? Because of course the U.S. government, which I might point out, is doing exactly this thing to others.
Everybody's doing it to everybody. But installing it onto the board is.
Well, you know where this. Okay, so. I talked to somebody who knows a little bit about this. Where this sometimes, most often happens is not in the Supermicro factory,
yep.
But after it's shipped. Mm-hmm. And the box goes through a depot in, Bethesda. Somebody opens the box, modifies the motherboard, and sends it on. That we know that happens. That actually has happened. We know that happens. It happens from us. It happens from China. It happens in many countries.
Israel.
We know that happens, Israel. We know that happens. So that's not a surprise. I mean, I guess the hot potato here is, did Supermicro do this themselves?
Yeah, the thing is that it's generally just not something you want to go back to the factory where it's going to, back to the assembler where it's going to go through a whole system of checks and everything else before it goes out. You want to do it after that when it's on the way, so you know where it's going, you know, and who you want to spy on, because sending it out too many places makes it easier to, like putting it in, the part that this seems very improbable is putting it into the manufacturing process. You know, it just seems like if they put it into the manufacturing process, that is a lot of computers out there. I mean, Elemental didn't sell 10 of them.
That's the only thing
that
we're disputing that you then disagree with. Not that it doesn't happen all the time, but that Supermicro got caught doing it. They're, by the way, they're based in San Jose. They're a U.S. company, although run by a Chinese national.
For me, the thing is the denials. I mean, like Apple and Amazon could conceivably have just said, look, we're looking into this. We don't know what's happened. There's no customer data that's been taken. We're going to report back to you. And it would have been fine. Like, it would have been annoying, but it would have been fine. We would have gotten over it and onto the next controversy by Tuesday. But it's the denials now. It's like, it's never the cover-up. It's never the crime. It's always the cover-up. To have Bloomberg double down on their sources and to have Apple and Amazon go so – I've never, ever seen these companies go so wholeheartedly on these denials. Any party in this could have de-escalated early on and saved a ton of face. Now there is so much at stake that you have to believe that there are a couple of people at Amazon and Apple that know this, that didn't even tell anybody who they would have to tell during the normal course of business at their company, including the IT and InfoSec chains and the legal chains. And it's just them sitting there talking to national security, and this one reporter happened to find out, or someone managed to bamboozle a reporter or steer them in the wrong way to the extent that Bloomberg was willing to publish this, and neither makes sense.
It have to be 17 someones, though.
But he might have 17 things saying, oftentimes you get info, like you can tell the quality of a journalist not by the sources they get, but by the narrative they extract from them. And seldom do reporters state facts. More often than not, reporters and their editors construct elaborate narratives around facts. And that's when they tend to make mistakes. It's not just reporting the things that they hear, it's trying to turn that into a story. And they've done something more often than not, we've seen that, especially with Apple. We've seen that with things like iPhone 10 sales, where you get a little bit of data and you make this whole iPhone 10 is not selling narrative, turns out to be completely wrong. That is always a danger in journalism, and that's where there's potential exposure here.
All right, let's take a break. I want to talk some more about this. I have a theory, but we'll talk in a bit.
I think Andy might be out because he couldn't.
And then we didn't hear anything from Andy.
Well, I kept trying to say things, but people were talking over me. I decided to let you boys talk.
Hang on. We'll give you a chance, Andy, right after I talk about my toilet. And that sounds like, I know, see, You can't talk about toilets without people giggling.
No, this is the best sponsor ever, Leo.
It is
the best. When do we get our samples?
It was you, Alex Lindsay, who turned me on to the Toto Washlet. You were the one who said you got to get this toilet, and I was the one who poo-pooed it. So, well, not literally, but I was,
and I was really bummed.
There's going to be a lot of puns, folks. I was the one who said, "Oh, come on, a toilet that washes your butt, you don't." That's. I could see that big in Japan. We know that this is like these Japanese toilet. Well, Toto's a Japanese company. This is Japanese. But I don't know why. Somehow, I guess you won me over, and I bought one. Mm-hmm. And Lisa was very skeptical. I don't know if you remember. Then Lisa said, "I love this." I said, "Yeah." I said, "Alex, you were right." And then,
do you know what got me into it?
What?
There was a NPR story about dealing with waste flow. You know, in emerging world countries, and they were talking to this expert. And of course, they get to the end and they go, "We got to ask you, like, what do you use, you know, for a toilet?"
A toilet.
And she goes, I use one of those Japanese toilets, and she said, because I don't just wash my dishes with a paper towel.
Oh,
and I was
point.
Like, oh,
that's
and then that's
true.
That's how I got started.
Plus, and this is, I think, why the Japanese use it. It's touchless, right? You're not touching anything except the remote control. You go into the commode, the toilet seat raises to welcome you. The seat is warm. You might want to live there. It's very comfortable. Now there are a variety of different. You can have one simple one that just replaces your lid and seat. You can get a whole toilet. We got the whole toilet. There's a variety of different with different capabilities. So some of the things may vary depending on with the touch of a button. And by the way, you can have different programs. So I have one program, Lisa has another. A wand extends from under the seat, and the water is warm. It spritzes you clean. It feels great. Ours has a fan and automatic deodorizer that filters the air to neutralize odors. It is pretty darn awesome. We like it so much. We, you know, anytime somebody came over to the house, we'd mention it. They'd say, they'd go into our bedroom, our master bath, and use it. So finally, we got one for the guest bathroom. Lisa said, "You know what? We're getting more of these," which is funny because she was the skeptic. So we got one for the master bath. Then Michael said, "What about me? I want one." So we have three of these in our house. And I tell you what, the hardest thing about traveling for me is leaving my Toto behind. I love these.
Unless you're going to Japan.
In Japan, it was funny because you know when you're with other people and they go and they use the Japanese toilet at a restaurant or something, they come out and they have the funniest look on their face. But you secretly, I think they really like it. I really do. It's awesome. And once you're hooked on it, life changes for you. There's other features you can get, like there's night lights, remote controls, on-demand water heating, so you just can keep running the water till the cows come home. It will impress your friends. I think it's going to be the most popular small home appliance in coming years. We are the last country in the world that still uses toilet paper. You know, I mean, this is a very,
although in
a lot
other
of countries
parts of the country,
think we're filthy.
Yeah, no, it's true. And you go to the other countries, but the other bidets, I don't make any sense.
No,
to me. Like you look at it, and you're like, I don't.
When we were in
that.
Barcelona,
hose.
They have a hose next to the toilet with a knob, and you turn it on. Like, it's cold. And you got to aim it right or you're going to spray all over you.
And just wait until you go to an airport in one of those countries.
It's not good. It's like an animal. Exactly, Renee. Get yourself a Toto Washlet. They are amazing. Check it out. You can see all the different models at a whole different range of prices at wayfair.com/MacBreak. It's really only a few hundred dollars for the basic seat and does it all. Wayfair.com/MacBreak. And in fact, we'll make it even more affordable if you use the offer code MacBreak at checkout. You'll get special savings. I don't know if love is a strong enough word.
Oh.
We, and Alex and I, who uses...
It's a civilized way to live.
It's civilized. It's a way of life. Yes, we love our Totos. You will too. Change the way you experience clean. Wayfair.com/MacBreak. Enter the promo code MacBreak at checkout. Alex and I both are so thrilled to have Toto as a sponsor of this show.
It is. I was like, when I walked in, he said, and Toto's mother, like,
he was so excited.
I was like, great.
Toto.
All right. I want to hear from everybody. Andy, what's your opinion on this whole thing?
I'm skeptical. I don't, there's too many problems with this story. There's a lot to digest. So I had, I think everybody had to like spend the whole weekend instead of going to those famous Columbus Day barbecues, just reading and talking to people. At this point, I just don't believe it because it's the writing itself is vague. It states facts that aren't really follow upable. I absolutely side with Renee that Apple really expended a lot of resources in putting out the word that they see no intersection between this article and their knowledge of reality. That was not that again, that took energy and that took resources. That's not something that they would do if they were either unaware of what was going on or if they were trying to cover up something or if they were being told that you're not allowed to reveal X, Y, and Z. Apple actually said, no, we are under no kind of government gag order about this thing. That's suspicious as well. The other thing that's pretty suspicious is that usually after a big news story like this, that loosens a lot of people's tongues. People who have seen things but didn't put things together, or people who didn't want to stick their neck out and be the person to blow the whistle on something, and now they're 2 years away from this job that they could have gotten fired from. That's when they start talking. I would have expected other journalists to be able to find at least the end of a new thread to pull on for this, and nobody has been able to do that. Then you get to the actual technical problems of the sort of hack that they're talking about, where they're talking about doing something at monumental scale. They're mentioning the article claimed that the chip was developed by a Chinese military unit, but we're talking about as you said earlier, this is when this sort of infiltration happens. It doesn't happen at the factory level. It happens at the, we're going to take these 500 units that we know are due to be shipped to there. we're going to use techniques to unseal them, make the changes we need and seal them back up again, and then ship them on. How do you design one of these chips and insert them, hide them effectively, and do it at the kind of manufacturing scale we're talking about there? I'm not saying that it's impossible it's impossible that the story is as true as they're presenting it. But the fact that there's so many shortcuts made, including here's the component that we're kind of illustrating could have been it, and it's clearly not it. The saying here's where it would have been inserted, and that is kind of a cut and paste from a bunch of like security talks that I think that other correspondent gave like last year, one of their other sources.
There's yeah, he too said much that's fuzzy he said that this chip specifically was a chip. A picture, an image of his.
I came across like of his old slide deck when I was on Friday or Saturday when I started trying to learn about this, and that he actually originally made me think, oh well, you know what, they actually pointed out where it would be, and now I've gotten like a sort of an education saying that would be a good place to put that. So maybe they did have good evidence, but then you keep reading and keep learning that, oh, actually maybe they actually got it from this guy. So I'm just saying that there's too much about this that is unknown, unproven, not underscored by a third party, and all the legally actionable stuff that Apple and other companies have said about this means that I have to be very skeptical that this is actually true, which is not to say that this sort of operation isn't happening today, but this particular story, I don't think we need to worry about.
And I think that the issue is that Apple has put an incredible amount at risk. All they had to do, if this wasn't the truth, was saying, we don't know anything about this, or they could have sent out something small. You know, no one's going to trust them again. If they are this certain and this outspoken, and it turns out that it actually did happen, it's a huge risk for Apple that Apple has to take into account. You know, and so I think that there is it just seems outlandish that all of these companies would in unison, you know, say it isn't there, and we don't have a board. You know, like we don't have a board of something that was made.
They made the thousands companies. Of. There's 30. They haven't named any of the other companies.
I don't worry quite so much that they haven't found it. If this was a real op, they would probably have hidden it like inside a fake capacitor or fake resistor. They would have had you'd only find it by really imaging every single component on that board and getting the active help of the designer of that board to spot. What should be there, what isn't there, what amounts to a revision, what amounts to not a revision. You'd have to really crack it open and see it. You can't just simply say, oh, this component here doesn't look like it belongs, because the amount of higgledy-piggledy that engineers have to apply to a board, both because of a design that failed early on and they just basically patched it, to we're putting some sort of a copy protection package into this thing to make sure that if someone tries to copy the board but forgets to get this component here or doesn't understand it, it's not going to work. We'll be able to find it.
Apple did cut off Supermicro 2 years ago. They used to buy Supermicro motherboards. They claim it was for other reasons.
Right, exactly. See, that's part of what really turned me around on it. I'm choosing my words carefully and legally. What it seems to fit in my mind, the results of what happens when you've come to a conclusion as a journalist and are looking for facts that buttress the conclusion that you've made, as opposed to looking at that big wobbly pile of facts you put together and see what it tells you. Once you have convinced yourself that, wow, we've got a blockbuster news story here about China as an intelligence state infiltrating things in the supply chain. Well, you know what? Apple used to use this product, but they mysteriously stopped. They didn't have a press release announcing why they had stopped using this server product. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? Well, no, unless you have someone at Apple who will tell you on the record that this is exactly what they found.
The on the record thing, you've been doing this long enough to know that a lot of sources are not on the record, and that doesn't mean never going to get anybody on the record from any of these companies saying anything, because their liability is much higher. For that was a
slip of the tongue, but yeah. I'm saying that you have to have someone who will tell you specifically that when it comes out, you every time you
well,
even
we don't
if you're
know is if what you're, people
even
told
if someone
them
is telling you something on background,
we don't know what
you have
they
to
said.
Decide as I'm going to keep talking here. If someone tells you something on background, what you're taught from an early age as a journalist is that assume that at some point you're going to have to reveal this source to a lawyer that is deposing you or reveal the tone of this source. So you're not going to even if you're not going to be able to use this person's name, you have to report as though you're using this name and everybody's going to check up on this. So it's suspicious that there is
again,
no backup for this.
Again, because you're a journalist, you do not have to reveal that source.
But you still have to. You have to be able to prove the veracity of what you're saying.
All you have to do is produce your reporter's notebook and say, "Here it is. These are my notes." And you'll never hear. You're never going to know where I got them because that's my source. That's normal. All of this is normal. I find it very hard to believe that Bloomberg Businessweek would fail this badly. Now, something's not right here. I don't find it hard at all to believe that Amazon and Apple would lie at all, because the liability on this is so vast. Here's the only thing that anybody's can debate on is this, that the microchips were inserted at the factory that supplied Supermicro right here. Because we all know that everything else in this story happens all the time. The only thing is, did the Chinese company that made those motherboards insert?
But I think that's the biggest part.
Or when
of the
they
story.
Inserted after the fact.
Well, so I think it's the other way around, though. I think the liability to Apple and Amazon was minimal here because there are so many stories of so many exploits all the time, and our attention span for them has been reduced to almost nil, and they could have very easily yada-yadded their way through this, and
really?
It wouldn't have been a story it wouldn't have been a story the next week.
Really?
By going on record, I think they've made it the story. The story to me is not the hack at all. The story to me is Apple and Amazon.
Well, that's kind of my
putting
point.
Their credibility at the line now. And I think for Bloomberg, though, I mean, if you listen to the podcast from the gentleman who brought out the source, these authors have had problems with previous stories. There was a pipeline explosion they blamed on hacking that was contradicted. They've had another story, I forget what, the New York Times and I think the Washington Post both took down and said were completely inaccurate.
So this is you think it's Jordan Robertson and Michael Riley?
I think there's a higher likelihood that they got it wrong or they got played than that Apple and Amazon would risk the SEC and ungodly amounts of shareholder lawsuits by now by lying about it.
And speaking of shareholders, a lot of LaMarket took a pretty good tech dive after this story. I'm also kind of wondering if we start to think about if these reporters were played. If someone decides that we know that a certain story that's going to be bad for the entire tech market is going to drop on Thursday, if we can engineer that to happen on a certain day, we can make some moves to anticipate that and make that happen. Well,
and
so there's There's a lot to wonder about with this.
I think people have to watch Super Micro stock, and if there's any major buyers sooner,
Here's what I think happened. It just seems very unlikely. I think you're right. I think that Jordan Robertson and Michael Riley probably got the story wrong or put the sources together in ways that actually are incorrect. But what no one can deny, and Brian Krebs writes about it today in Krebs on Security, is that this is a problem. Supply chain security is not certain, and these things are happening all the time. We can go back and forth about did Apple know, did Amazon know, did Supermicro know, but that's kind of not really the issue. This is what Brian writes. Like it or not, the vast majority of electronics are made in China. This is unlikely to change anytime soon. The central issue is we don't have any other choice right now. The reason is that by nearly all accounts, it would be punishingly expensive to replicate that process here in the United States.
And by the way, other countries wouldn't trust U.S. electronics anymore than we trust the electronics of other countries.
And in fact, I think there's strong evidence that we do the same thing in the other direction. Now, how it happens, whether it happens at the factory floor or after the fact,
in a UPS depot,
I don't know if that's. I mean, the issue for Supermicro is big, obviously. Yeah. If I'm Supermicro,
the thing with this is, at some point, if there is an investigation, it will become public. Like, we get freedom of information request, or it'll be declassified. At some point, we'll know, and that damage will be done. But to your point, this is a huge problem. Hardware. There's a whole bunch of software exploits. Hardware exploits are getting not easier, but they're getting easier for nation-state level actors, definitely, to presume to perpetrate. And moving them to the factory is the next logical step for them.
The other interesting point on this is that you can have machines with secure boot, and they can boot up and say, yep, my operating system's unchanged. But if you can put something like this on a motherboard that can modify it after boot, there is a reason to do that, right? Because it's not less detectable.
Well, and I think that one of the things that what I would do if I was trying to do something, whether it does it all now or not, is I would build something like a T2 chip or a T1 chip. You know, like that is something that I can completely control, that is kind of constantly checking, you know, its own hardware. And it also is why you would do something like make it difficult to fix things, you know, like to change things other than what you had configured. You know, so, you know, there are things that we can do that can do that stuff. It's not going to be guaranteed. And I think it's good for us to start thinking about the fact that we're not private. You know, when we have all this electronics around us, we do have to think about that. You know, and I think
Krebs writes, the U.S. government is not eager to admit it, but there has long been an unofficial inventory of tech components and vendors that are forbidden to buy from if you're in charge of procurement on behalf of the U.S. government.
He says,
more than a decade ago, when I was a reporter at the Washington Post, I heard from an extremely well-placed source that one Chinese tech company had made it onto that list because they sold a custom hardware component for internet-enabled printers that secretly made a copy of every document or image sent to the printer and then sent that document to the hackers aligned with the Chinese government. That was 10 years ago.
Well, and you know,
this stuff has to be happening all the time.
And we did lose all of those. Remember all those frames that you used to get that you could put your memory card into? Yeah, they were all
juice-jacking.
They were all calling home. They were all calling home. Like they were, you know, and you know, it became a big issue. And unless you flash your, you know, FPGAs, they're probably calling home too. And so there's a lot going on that area, and you can't trust it.
So I guess that's my point, is we can debate the merits of this article or the details of the article, but I think the gist of it, which is that these hacks are happening, is not inaccurate. I mean, obviously, Apple, Amazon, and Supermicro care a lot about the
luckily,
details.
We're all spending a fortune and being real serious about cybersecurity. Sorry, Andy.
The scary thing is not that World War III is going to be fought with servers and networks and computers and devices. The scary thing is that it's already being fought right now. We just don't see the effects. As we've already had, basically, we have invasion fleets have already infiltrated. We have all the weapons that are locked and loaded and ready to go. And on all sides, I'm not just talking about U.S. being victims of other countries. I'm talking about U.S. enforcing attacks on other countries. It really is, at this point, waiting for someone to send the command that, okay, lighting grid in Paris, just shut it down right now. I'm sure that maybe not quite as dramatic as that, but these weapons are weapons of various levels of destruction are ready to go. And there are teams that are trying really hard to make them even more destructive and more widespread.
I think that if we understood what and I'm not talking about just cyber, I'm talking about what we do all over the world, what happens all over the world as Americans. And I think a lot of Western countries, we're kind of left in a kind of a nice little hum that we feel safe and everything feels fine. But there's an enormous amount of work being done all the time. And there was no stop to any kind of war. I mean, people are fighting this all over the world all the time to, you know, and that's just always happening. And so, the fact that we don't see it just means that we don't see it, but it's whether it's cyber, whether it's military, all of those things are being expressed all the time.
Yeah. Here's one story from, Apple Insiders, quoting a security expert working for a major telecom firm whose name cannot be revealed. This is Cepio Systems chief Yossi Applebaum, who says the telecom company's server was modified in the factory where it was produced, with Western intelligence contacts advising it was made at Supermicro subcontractor in Guangzhou. This is completely separate from the Bloomberg report. The telecom's facility allegedly housed a large number of Supermicro servers. Technicians could not say what kind of data was moving through the infected server. It is also unknown if FBI was informed by the client. AT&T says, those devices are not part of our network, and we are not affected. Did not deny the story, in other words. This is completely unrelated, and yet it's a similar story. So I think you're going to hear more of these stories. And I think that Apple and Amazon, I understand why they're saying, well, those specifics didn't happen. But I think they're not doing us a favor by implying somehow, oh, no, we're magically secure. There's nothing going on here. Pay no attention to that. And I think that if you read between the lines, they're not saying that. They're just addressing this report. I feel like the gist of this is actually accurate and is a warning call. And nobody's been paying attention. This has been going on for a decade, at least. And nobody wants to pay attention to it because there's no reasonable fix for it. And the U.S. government would very much like people to believe that it's all coming from China, because at this point we're at a trade war with China and they'd like to shut down. Don't you think our government would love all these manufacturers to move to the United States?
Yeah, but how can they enforce that? They can only enforce that by convincing consumers to spend $1,400 for a phone they're used to spending $500 for.
What's the first shot in that war?
I don't know.
Scare people.
See, the environment will take out all this technology, Leo, and we'll be safe.
I really would like to know more about this, and I think we will. Yeah. I don't think this is over. And honestly, I think if Apple had ignored it and Amazon had ignored it, it would not have gone away. I think we're gonna see a lot more of this. The problem is, the public probably isn't that interested. The public, just like everybody else, would just like to say, "I'm not going to worry about that. It's too hard to figure it out. Too hard to solve it."
Yeah. Well, it's also something that you just can't control.
Right.
Just like you got to drive your car, you got to cross the street. You can't control whether or not there's going to be an idiot on their phone or drunk or both barreling into you at any given moment. You can keep your eyes out, but you're just going to have to decide that this is part of why life on Earth tends to suck.
And part of the problem is that what we do to protect ourselves is part of what gets into this. If you look at Stuxnet, if you look at a lot of the stuff that shut down half of Europe, those are all stuff we made. we made that, it got out, and now this stuff is, there's a lot of the technology is stuff that we're building because we're trying to figure this all out.
This reminds me of that Sean Connery movie. I've mentioned this before, The Anderson Tapes, where an entire apartment building is robbed and every three-letter agency has been snooping on their various members. They could put the whole story together, but the last thing they want anybody to know is what they've been up to. So the end of the movie is all those tapes being erased one after the other, while the guy, Sean Connery, who masterminded the theft, is enjoying a cigar in Havana on the beach. Yep. Because even though a perfect picture of this crime exists, nobody wants to admit this is going on. And I feel like that's really the real story here is everybody involved would just prefer this just goes away.
Well, and there's a whole issue of sources and methods where you make a decision about, our government may know all kinds of things about why certain crimes may have occurred in other parts of the world, and they may know stuff about what's occurring to ours. But if we actually prosecute that, then we show how deep the rabbit hole goes, I think there's just a lot of decisions made. Like, we can't fix that problem, because we can't.
Yeah, we're all fat and jolly and selling a lot of iPhones and a lot of stuff.
Oh, it's more than that, though. I think
we're all everybody's happy here, so let's just not rock the boat.
Well, I think it's mostly making sure that people still leave their house.
It's just bad in the house. I got a Facebook camera. I got an Amazon camera. I got a Google camera.
But I mean, beyond that, I mean, I think that if people knew how deep the risks were, so I think that it's not, they just want to make sure everyone still feels like it's okay to go outside. Because it is. It's safer than
shopping. Keep shopping, everybody. Keep shopping.
Just keep
statistically
shopping.
Statistically speaking, Lois,
it's... Yeah, exactly.
Wow, this is taking a bad turn.
Yeah. Can we go back to talking about Toto?
Yeah. Everybody should buy a nice Japanese toilet.
At least you'll have a clean butt.
one thing you can control in this life.
And there's no incentive to hack your toilet, right? What would be the payoff?
Yeah, don't get many ideas.
most of this is, I think, is not maybe cyber warfare, but I think a lot of this is just industrial espionage. I mean, why would you want all the printouts from a company? Well, because you'd like to get their plans and their patents and all that stuff, right? It's mostly, I would guess, mostly industrial. Maybe not. Is it? I don't know.
Hard to separate the two in some countries.
Well, we know, and we do know that World War III is coming, but it'll be a cyber... Hey, in a way, it's not so bad. It'll be a cyber warfare.
Cyber.
Even if the power goes out, it's not like getting shot.
Well, the question is that when all of our cars are driving for us and they all get hacked at the same time,
that would be bad. Yeah,
it's not necessarily great.
I will say that war is war. There's nothing good about it, but at least in a cyber war, the rich people
suffer.
It's not going to just be. It's not just going to be the poor people who to like go out and fight and get killed. I think that there are going to be teenage rich people who are also going to say, "My Tesla won't start."
Actually, that's another strong motivation for just saying, "Don't worry, no, it's none of that," because as we move towards an AI world where we're letting the machines do more and more of everything, then we really are more vulnerable. That's a nightmare scenario where we're all getting in self-driving cars.
Oh yeah, it's there's a lot to but 20 how many tens of thousands of people die because other
the
humans
AI
hit them?
Will take us the humans.
But I mean, like, it'll be a different risk. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be more of a risk than it is. But there is the axiom of that we always have to remember is that to err is human, but to really screw things up requires a computer.
Yeah.
Yep,
Lindsay. Do you want to play a game?
You are so funny. Please see me in my office.
Think about what happens if like someone can hack into forget self-driving cars. Imagine like a reusable rocket, and someone manages to say, "By the way, you're supposed to land on the floating landing pad in the middle of the ocean. Let me tell you the exact coordinates of where that pad is. It's surprisingly enough, it's actually 80 miles inland from Boston, over this highly populated area. But definitely land right there in what looks like a parking lot, but totally isn't a parking lot." Yeah, there's a lot of things you could. if you're writing a modern spy novel, there's a lot of ways your Blofeld could cause a lot of disruption that weren't available in 1967.
Have you ever it's okay.
We're bumming each other out, now we just want to. Can we talk about Pokemon Go again or fancy watch bands?
I got something shiny. The iPhone XS and XS Max review from Anand Tech. You always wait for Anand Tech's take on the deep silicon and all that stuff.
They finally have a mobile editor again. I mean, Andre is there now, but there was a break when Joshua Ho left. And then we didn't get an iPhone review last year from them.
What?
So now they're back. Yeah.
To me, the top line is the processor's so fast in this thing, it's basically desktop class.
It's ludicrous.
Way beyond anything that you're seeing in any other device, that Apple really I mean, this is a 7-nanometer TSMC chip. Incredibly powerful. Two new CPU cores running at 2.5 gigahertz. Apple's claims that it's, you know, much faster, he seems to say are absolutely true. There's also, besides
Andre
the two
they're
Vortex,
underselling it.
They're underselling
the marketing
it.
Was underselling.
They're underselling. The two Vortex cores have are also supported by smaller four smaller high efficiency cores called Mistral. And that's where you get the, you know, the battery sipping power and, you know, the power when you need it, but low power usage when you most of the time. The Apple says the GPU is 50% higher, but he says, "Yep, it's even better than that."
They weren't even memory compressing before. It's like they just added that and got a huge boost, and it makes you wonder how they were getting that performance before.
Right. Anything else from this that we should? This is the first commercial 7-nanometer silicon. This is something Intel could not do.
The news here is just that Apple can afford to do this. I mean, like Qualcomm is a silicon merchant, but that's expensive. And other companies either use, you know, Samsung makes some of their chips, they use some Qualcomm chips, but it's incredibly expensive. And Apple is paying for first access to a 7-nanometer fab. And they don't take profit and loss on the chipset. They do not need to keep it on a shelf. They do not need to sell it at a margin that another phone maker will do it. They can subsidize the price of that chip by the overall price of the phone. They've managed to get some of the best talent in the world, and they are happy to let them run, not walk, not crawl, not, can you keep this on the market another year or two so we can really get some profit out of this? It's just make the best thing you can make, and we'll stick it in this phone and see what we can do with
it. It's pretty damn impressive. And things that are just, you know, underneath the hood that only somebody like Andres, he can even notice, like better improvement in cache performance. He did the spec mark on it. He says it's been a while since we attempted spec on an iOS device. And so he's got the full 2006 harness back to work and was able to do a bunch of evaluations. And this is energy and performance.
Yeah.
And I don't know what this all means.
It's 2 to 3 times more performance efficient, which I think is Qualcomm language. That really smells like Qualcomm language to me. Performance efficient
performance
than other Android processors.
Per watt or something like that, yes.
Well, right. the speed with which it can get back to zero state.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to extract. This is very geeky. I highly encourage anybody who's interested in this stuff, reads it. I'm just trying to extract the top line.
The camera, I mean, he said, you know, we're getting a lot of mixed reviews with the camera, but we're getting mixed reviews about what is the best camera in the world, not whether it's a good or bad camera.
Right.
And I think, I forget what he said. I think he probably put it a little bit below the Pixel, but he liked that too. And the battery, I mean, all the tests he did were phenomenal.
The A12 outperforms a moderately clocked Skylake CPU, a desktop CPU, in single-threaded performance. Okay, that's interesting. it's just here's the speedometer 2.0 OS view. This down here is a Pixel XL. This up here is an iPhone XS. That's a lot faster.
It's very iPhone heavy at the top.
Yeah. S9 Plus here is right in the middle. That's the latest Samsung. Well, almost the latest Samsung.
So there's been a lot of misunderstanding here, too. And like a lot of people said, like, you know, but I don't see the difference. You know, I use my phone and I don't see the difference. But one of the biggest differences is that it lets this phone have an incredibly long, useful life. The phone has got massive amounts of overhead. And you can test those limits doing really complex AR or computational photography matrices. You can push that chip right now. But it means that that phone will still be useful when it's getting updates for 2 years, 3 years, four years. And it's why an iPhone 5S can run iOS 12. So it really is something that you want headroom on, so you do have the longevity of your purchase.
So this is a JavaScript benchmark, for instance, and the closest non-Apple phone is less than half the performance. That's the Xiaomi Mi Mix 2S. Less than half the performance of the iPhone.
It is getting hard now, though, because there are so many dedicated units, like there's decoders and encoders and JavaScript accelerators, that you never know what's hitting the processor and what's hitting dedicated.
Yep. And he says that.
This is faster.
This is tough to test. It really is tough to test. And I'm not a big fan of benchmarks, but it's fascinating to read. I mean, exactly as you say, this is talk about painting the inside of the fence. This is like stuff that
The wonderful thing about reading these kind of reviews is with Apple, you know that they're building a phone not to run iOS 12. They've already got iOS 14. They're right. Looking at those features. They right. know exactly what the code has to do. And so that the fact that the past 3, 4, or 5 years, I can't think of an iPhone that has not been grotesquely overpowered for the features of the operating system that they've released alongside the phone. And well, I'll be darned, it turns out the next year they're doing augmented reality. And I'll be darned, it turns out next year they're doing a camera that takes a bajillion pictures like with one press in a split second, which is something that they used to have to, okay, hold the camera steady because we're going to take 3 pictures in sequence right now. We're well beyond the point where you can tell the speed of a phone by how fast it feels in your hand. We now tell the speed of a phone by the magical things that now happen with one tap, one button press, one swipe, because you have no idea how much math, how many pixels are being shifted just to make a transition from one app to another feel good.
Apple said the GPU is 50% faster. He's actually testing it 75% faster than the iPhone X. Maybe Apple thought if we said that, nobody would believe us. Read all about it.
And he's one of the few people who really understands and can do benchmarks. He's not just downloading an app and pressing a button.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
And it's hard to do, especially on mobile.
It's so much custom code and so much time.
Yeah, and it's so tied into the hardware that you don't know if it's not doing a good job on math. Well, that's because they found a different solution to do the kind of math that they need to do for various things. That's why you don't go for the downloaded stuff. It really is what features do you like and how does it feel in the hand.
Basically, he's doing what somebody disassembling source code is doing. He's trying to understand what Apple's doing, but only Apple really knows what their goals were with these chips and why they're making these chips perform this way. And it's, he's trying to,
the best thing you can say is he probably didn't get everything right, but he probably made the platform technologies engineers super happy.
with his compliments. He also says he looks forward to testing the 10R. He says, I think it's going to be an incredibly attractive alternative to the 10S models. And that's because the 10R is inside the same, right?
The chip is the same. There's far fewer pixels to push around. So it should fly. It should be like the SE faster. All over again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and these really are, we're now to the point where, these truly are just computers that are just a lot smaller. So we think of them as phones.
Yep. Right.
But they're computers that happen to take phone calls. And but they are now reaching that point where they're competitive with many of the laptops that we have and everything else. It'd be really interesting to see what the next iPad looks like and how it performs and what it can do. And I think one of the big problems that Apple has with upgrades with the iPad is that I don't think developers take enough advantage of what the hardware can do. And I think that's something that Apple almost has to do because they're not really these iPads, will do an enormous amount of things. And then we, do really, really simple, make simple products because that's what's easier to build for $399.
Lots of people complaining. I talked about it last week about Wi-Fi issues, LTE issues, and charging issues with their XS. Lisa had a lot of we were about to take it back thinking we had a lemon. A lot of problems with her XS Max losing internet, basically, whether at home or on the road, whether it's Wi-Fi or LTE.
She Verizon?
She's on T-Mobile.
Interesting.
As am I. I have an identical phone on an identical carrier, and I don't have the problems. However, Apple did release yesterday 12.0.1. Which they say does fix a Wi-Fi bug and a charging issue. So I told Lisa we should let's defer calling Apple, trading the phone into you, see if it's better. She's had to reboot multiple times. Megan had the charging issue where you sometimes plug in a Lightning charger to your iPhone and it wouldn't see it. But all of these things should be fixed.
Yeah.
With 12.0.1. Apple says that the Wi-Fi bug was some iPhone XS devices try to join a 2.4 gigahertz network rather than a 5 gigahertz network.
Yep.
So that will be fixed. There's a reorientation of the 123 number key on the iPad. Okay.
It was hard. It's funny they screwed that one up.
Issue, I think, or something like that. Anyway,
you can't mess with people's emoji muscle memory, Leo. You just can't do it.
Do not mess with my emoji. My emoji. Don't mess with them. So you think this is fixing those problems? Renee?
It does. As far as we can tell, they identified the issue. They did their tests. They put it out in the beta a couple days early just in case people would scream about another problem that it caused. And then instead of waiting till 12.1, they released it with 12.0.1, okay. Which was meant people got it immediately.
So if you're on 12.1, if you're on the beta channel, public beta channel, you should have this fixed. You've already
yes.
had this fixed. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Apparently there's a daylight savings bug.
Saving. Australia.
There's only one. Yeah. The latest watch is crashing and rebooting. Yeah, time is tough. Australians the first to be affected because they just moved to standard time.
Yeah, I think all of daylight savings time is a bug, and that's
you
why
know
the
it's on the ballot in California. Did you see that,
man.
Prop 7? It's on the ballot that we would just stay in daylight saving time.
Oh, please, so go the world. I would like if you guys could please start that. Oh, it would be
California. What's weird is, you know, when we get the ballot, we get these pro and con arguments. There's some state senator saying this is a terrible idea. And her main argument is, do you know it'll still be dark at 7:30 in the morning on Christmas Day?
Oh, my gosh.
That's her argument against it.
What about the people who have to wind my clocks every twice a year? What about their jobs?
How will we know when to change the batteries in our smoke detectors?
I just want whatever poison we take, I just want us all to take the same poison. Because if I have to, the number of times that I've been thrown off like, oh, I did not know that you were 30 minutes ahead of everybody else. Okay. And so now if I have to remember that all the West Coast is 3 hours ahead, except for California, which is on Greenwich Mean Time.
That's a good point. I must admit, Andy, we got to just convince everybody to stay.
I'm fine with California leading the pack and then everyone else following. I'm fine to do whatever it takes to get rid of this stupid idea.
It's just a terrible idea. I agree.
I'm with you, but it only screws me up like twice a year, as opposed to again the Indiana part of it. Was it Indiana where part of it is doing the half hour thing, part of it isn't doing the, and it's like,
well, Arizona.
I feel
Arizona's
so stupid when I don't know.
Arizona's already sane. It's already sane.
So apparently, this first cropped up in Australia, which has moved to daylight saving time because they're in the summer. They sprung forward yesterday, and apparently in the Series 4 watch, it gets stuck in a reboot loop. Now, one fix is just to wait till tomorrow.
I just want to thank everyone in Australia for doing this beta test for us.
Beta testing, yeah.
Apparently it has something to do with a bug in the infograph activity complication. So another solution might be to remove that complication, which I use, by the way, I like.
Yeah.
Remove that from your watch face
for the day.
You could do that on the phone just for the day.
Yeah.
It maps hour by hour data on calories burned, exercise time, and how many times you stood up in a 24-hour period. Apparently, the missing hour is confusing it. What happened? There's no 2 a.m. hour.
If only Apple was headquartered in Melbourne, this would never have happened.
Never happened. Europe goes off DST at the end of the month. They're going to fall back at the end of the month. We change November 4th here in North America. So I presume Apple will fix this. But if they don't, just remove the activity complication from your infograph and you won't get the boot loop.
Someone listening to the show who didn't know what this was would just think we're making up words at this point.
At the end of the article on The Verge, Tom Warren, I love you. He says, maybe this is Apple's subtle way of telling the world that daylight saving time is hot garbage.
It is.
And exactly. The madness. Maybe we will in just a few weeks.
What if they pull the same sort of strategy that they use for the headphone jack? If they just simply say, we're Apple, we're just going to drop support for this, and everybody else is just going to have to deal with it. And then, so if they said none of our devices can handle daylight savings time, if you don't like it, call your congressperson.
Oh my gosh, that would be great.
This is a typical confusing California proposition, by the way, because if you read the proposition, you'll have no idea what you're voting for. It's the Uniform Time Act, which... this is good. Conforms daylight saving time to federal law, allows legislature to change daylight saving time period legislative statute establishes the time zone designated by federal law as Pacific Standard Time as the standard time within California, provides that California daylight saving time begins at 2 a.m. on the second Sunday of March, ends at 2 a.m. on the first Sunday of November, consistent with federal law, permits the legislature by two-thirds vote to make future changes on California's daylight saving time period, including its
I don't understand.
Would you vote yes on that?
I don't even care now. Like, yeah, I just want to.
No. That's why you have to go somewhere like Ballotpedia, which says a yes vote means we can have permanent year-round daylight saving time.
Okay.
But the state legislature has to approve it by a two-thirds vote.
That reminds me of my one absolute critical part. I don't know what daylight savings time means. I don't know if
I'm being serious.
I mean, that does it mean, oh, we're in daylight, because sometimes when you set things up, you say, oh, are we in daylight savings time or not? I say, well, no, oh, that's right, I did set the clocks backward, so we saved. Well, no, that also works if I set the clocks forward. It's like, it makes me mad that I have to Google, are we in daylight savings time right now, to know whether which one is which.
See, and I don't say anything when I talk to people, because you're constantly making I'm constantly in meetings, and so you have to agree on what time in what time zone we're talking about.
Except
and
for
I just take out the ES. I just go ET, PT,
yeah.
MT.
Figure it out.
Like, I'm not going to even get into that conversation, because all I know is it's stupid.
So Ballotpedia scores ballot propositions on readability, and this scored a ridiculous 12th grade level on the Flesch Kincaid grade level, and 17 on the Flesch reading ease level, which basically means no one could read this and possibly
understand. Can we normalize this with an iFixit scale, just so that I only have to keep track of one thing?
Yes, on a scale of 0 to 10, it's a 0. And then the arguments against are so funny. It seems to be just two members of the assembly. So please vote no on Proposition 7. We've tried this before, and it was a disaster. Daylight, this is a good one. Daylight saving time does not create more hours of daylight. It just changes when those hours occur.
You will not be receiving rollover daylight hours that you can use on a subsequent day.
When you fall backwards, you actually get
an hour.
Back.
You gain an hour. Everybody knows that.
That one Sunday is awesome.
But what if I happen to sleep until 3, because I'm not experiencing the daylight hours? Can I get those 6 daylight hours and attach them to a beach day in August?
Here's the argument against. What will it mean to have permanent daylight saving time? The sun will rise an hour later than if we were on standard time. If you live in Eureka, it would still be dark at 8 a.m. on New Year's Day. The sun won't rise in Los Angeles until 7:30 a.m. or later from November to February. Those of you who like to wake up with the sun will wake up in the dark.
I just want to point out to the folks living in districts 19 and 55. These are your representatives. You voted them in. I'm just saying. They're both Democrat and Republican, so I don't have to take a side there, but
it's bipartisan.
It's bipartisan stupidity.
Yep.
Okay. At last, something the Congress can agree on.
We can all agree on. Are you going to get the new Nike Plus watch?
Yawn.
New face and reflective band?
I have one.
Of course you do. You have to have one of everything.
I'm not wearing it, but I have it.
Yawn.
Speaking of yawns, they disconnect. There it is. That's the new face. The Nike's got a swoosh on it. They discontinued Minecraft for Apple TV due to lack of interest.
It's so hard to play. It was confused. It was just hard to play.
I'm interested. I never tried it on the TV.
It's boring.
Is it boring?
Yeah, it was much better on. I mean, once you have you have access to the iPad or the
I just like it on the computer.
PC. The PC is the
Xbox.
It was
perfect on the PC
with that little controller. And unless you really decided you're going to get a controller for it and everything else, it was not worth it.
It was announced at Apple's October 2016 keynote. Mm. You could build new worlds in your Apple TV, said Tim Cook, and play with your friends using iPhones and iPads, except they're not playing.
No, and officially for my son, he was my 10-year-old son is just like, ugh.
Well, that's the thing. You had a game tester. You knew.
No, he plays it on everything. And
no surprise.
That and Roblox. And
let's take a break, and then I want to talk about Intel's announcements, new Intel chips, and what that might mean for Macintoshes. Is.
Did they name them? Are these Lake Lakes? Are we finally down to they have no words left and they're just Lake chips?
No more lakes. They're all lakes. It's lakes all the way down. Our show today brought to you by WordPress.com, the place to create your website. It's where mine is, leolaporte.com. I love WordPress. I've been using WordPress since the day Matt Mullenweg put it out in the early 2000s. It's a great platform. For the first few years, I was hosting it myself and paying for a server, doing all the updates, doing the security patches. I liked that because I learned how it worked. It was great. I made my own template, my own designs. Then I found out about WordPress.com, where for less money than I was paying for my own server, they take care of the hosting. They take care of the security, the software updates. They offer hundreds and hundreds of templates. You can still design your own if you want, but man, why? I mean, they're beautiful templates with all the design and engineering you'd ever want. You can upload images, video, and audio and more, and you're uploading it to your server, your WordPress.com site, and easy to get stuff into and out of it. So, yeah, you don't control the server, but did you ever really control the server? Was I going to go down to SoftLayer in Dallas, Texas, and say, I'd like my hard drive, please? No. You never, you know, so even if you're doing self-hosting, it's the same thing. WordPress.com, let them do it. You're never stuck at WordPress, but that is your home on the internet. Every single person, every single business needs that site that's theirs. It's all theirs. Not your Facebook page, not your Twitter account, but yours. And by the way, when I was traveling, I blogged a bunch from the trip, put all my postcards up there, and I did it all on the iPhone and iPad. It was so easy. The WordPress app is so good. Makes it really easy to post, to moderate comments, to keep an eye on things, even get great stats so you know which of your posts was popular, which wasn't. You can launch your website with confidence knowing you can get help from a 24/7 support team whenever you need it. And man, is it affordable. WordPress plans start at just $4 a month. I'm a WordPress fanatic, and I love WordPress.com/MacBreak. If you go there right now, you'll get 15% off any new plan purchase. WordPress.com/MacBreak, your new website. If you're a business owner, man, you just have to have your own website. You got to do it. And it's so easy. They have built-in SEO, social linking, which is great. It means your readers can link to your site on their Facebook and Twitter and help you generate traffic. WordPress.com/MacBreak, 15% off your brand new site. So Intel has been announcing all sorts of new processors this week, including they're going 8-core, baby. The Xeon W3175X is an 8-core processor.
28-core.
Did I say 8? Pardon me. 28-core. That's the Mac Pro right there, isn't it? That's what they've been waiting for.
I think so.
I feel like
it won't work on the iMac Pro, right? Because it's too hot.
Yeah. Oh, God. But they put Xeons in the Mac Pro. And
they just won't put these ones in. Because I think they said the wattage was like 375 or something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, what are you going to do? It's a Skylake Cascade Lake micro architecture. Works on the LGA 3647 socket. The CPUs run at 3.1 gigahertz stock, but can be increased to 4.3. Six-channel DDR4 memory, 512 gigabytes, 38.5 megabyte cache. It is a new socket, so you'd have to design a new system. And no, 265 watts.
No, 265.
Power draw. Wow. Wow.
At some point, someone's going to say, I need a 40-amp circuit for my computer.
Yeah. That could be my new Bitcoin
funny little
mining
plug. It's no longer a standard Edison.
Yeah. That would be that. See, so I feel like Apple's been just like tapping, like drumming their fingers on the table, looking over there at Intel saying, we need a new chip. They also announced a 9th generation Core CPU. This is the one maybe, I don't know, these aren't the U chips, these aren't the mobile chips, but an 8-core, that's the one I was talking about, an i9, i7, i5, these are Coffee Lake, no, I'm confused, I don't know, why, do you know what generation, I don't know. 9th generation?
Yeah, no, Coffee Lake was 8th generation, so this is a new lake.
Next one.
But I don't know if it's Whiskey Lake or Ice Lake or Cobalt Lake or...
It sounds like he's joking, kids, but he's not.
No, I go to sleep and I wake up and there's a new lake. It's a very serious problem in this industry.
It's crazy. So given this, you know, rush of announcements from Intel, it sounds to me like It's getting to look a lot like Christmas.
No, so, I mean, it's a huge problem, Leo, because they are still having trouble getting to 10 nanometer, and let alone 7 nanometer. And yes, those are marketing names, but they're important because they let them put more transistors in a smaller die space and then get more performance at cooler temperatures. They're throwing cores in it again. And that's when you start hitting thermal limits of these machines. And as much as people say, just make the machines as big as you want, nobody wants a 12-pound laptop or a 90-pound desktop.
No.
And just 28 cores, fine, but like shrink them.
Shrink them, damn it. Yes. Yeah, they can't get down. So these are still 14 nanometer parts. This is, according to this chart, a Coffee Lake refresh.
Yeah, and we saw Kaby Lake refresh earlier in the 8th gen. So.
Right, so Ice Lake is sometime maybe next year.
You thought I was joking, right? Ace Lake, Cascade Lake, Copper Lake.
Cooper Lake.
And Cannon Lake, which is supposed to be the next generation processor, was supposed to follow the original Skylake, is still not on here.
So what do you think? Will we see new laptops this year? Maybe, they could announce the Mac Pro for release in March or something like that.
I hope they don't. Like, I think that they've learned now the pre-announced. I mean, they've already said they're making it. I think, manage those expectations. Do not air power anything else in the near future. But like, we should get the whatever replaces the MacBook Air at the entry level MacBook. The iMacs and the iMac Pro haven't been updated to Coffee Lake yet, so there's that. There's also, if they're going to do the non-touch bar MacBook or the 12-inch, please get it off Core M MacBook. There's a lot of things that could still get spec bumps this year. And the new Mac Mini. There's a new Mac Mini on the way.
Yeah. If there's an upside to all these delays, it means that it gives them a chance to effectively reset. If people have already been sort of resigned to the fact that we're just going to have to wait to get the new Mac Mini or the new Mac Pro and the new MacBooks until they actually arrive, it gives them choosing to release it when they feel as though they've got an entire game plan ready to roll. They don't really lose anything if it ships if they announce it in March as opposed to in December, or if they announce it at WWDC instead of in March. The important thing is that once they get this thing off the ground, it continues to fly. So I would love to see them wait until they've got a plan for they're ready to release the new Mac Pro, because they know they have a timeline for the next version of the Mac Pro that is going to work. They're going to wait for a replacement for the MacBook Air because they know that whatever they replace it with, they've got the next 3-year strategy to make sure there are at least, if not necessarily timely updates, at least regular predictable updates to it.
How about MacBook or MacBook Air? In October, November.
Yep.
I can see a refresh. I don't think we'd see a design change. I think we would just see
maybe these. I guess these aren't U chips, so they couldn't put the new chips in. So,
yeah. I think we'd see a new MacBook nothing. I'm not sure what we'll see. I think that the MacBook Air is end of life at this point. I don't see why they would update this hardware when they could do an entire new redesign. Actually, an entirely new product that takes the role of the MacBook Air.
I think the thing I'm most excited.
We haven't seen it already.
As someone who owns probably 20 or 30 Mac Minis, I am most
You're
excited about the Mac Mini.
You're never going to see a new Mac
Mini. Oh yeah. I have dreams. I dream about a new Mac Mini. The big thing I want to see is just something that is really built for the way we use them, which is they all get racked somewhere. I mean, I think that's where a lot of these are getting used. So half rack, and really built to be half rack. And right now, to like restart it, you have this funny little mechanical thing that Sonnet makes that you push and it pushes in the thing. You're just like, why don't we just have it be a like built for that? It'd be interesting to see a Mac Mini that was like half 1U and really built to just know that we're going to do half 1Us and like a little mini server.
I'm taking a picture of you with the new Halide 1.10.
So good.
With Smart Raw.
I feel smarter already.
You look smarter. So this is if you had Halide, which of course I did, you'll get the update automatically.
Yeah, see, look at how smart.
There's how smart. That's JPEG. But when I hit into the Smart Raw, it's a little bit different. We talked last week, and I highly recommend everybody read the blog posting about this and the challenge and so forth. But Halide is now out. The Smart Raw that he was talking about is now out. Also, I might mention complications for Dark Sky, the little mini complications for Infograph, Dark Sky and Fantastical. Immediately updated those. Very happy about that.
And I went and got my watch for you, Leo.
Ooh, the Nike swoosh watch.
Yeah, swoosh. It's like so many colors. There are so many colors on these faces now.
I love that intense color background. I think it sets off the new watch so well with that larger display.
Yeah.
It's so hot. And you also get the updated Nike app. There's also a new updated Nike trainer app that if you don't want to just run, you get, I think it's like 180 different kinds of exercises on your wrist.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. If you're my recommendation is if you're going to get an aluminum watch and you don't care about gold because Nike Plus don't gold, you're thinking of getting the steel, the space gray or the silver, then get the Nike one because you get everything you get in the regular one plus all the special Nike stuff. And whether you use it or not, I think they're the same price. I don't think there's a Nike surcharge. You also get the new band. They have an option for a band that is reflective. So if you ever do go jogging or walking at night, at least your wrist won't get hit.
Cool. Best Buy has them. Cool. Maybe I should have.
And the biggest advice I can give is if you are even considering getting a Nike watch or any Apple watch for a relative for the holidays, order now because they are in high. I think the demand is still rapidly exceeding the supply. I got them for everyone I care about because I want them to have the Series 4 fall detection and the heart rate monitor and everything. Yeah. And it's they're hard to come by already. So don't wait till the last minute because you might not find them in stock this year by early.
This is
and remember, you can return that within two weeks if it turns out that when it arrives, you don't need it. Or put it on eBay for people who did not order ahead.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like the way you think in that, Co.
So $399.
Like a young man like you in our organization.
$399 for the 40mm, $429 for the 44mm.
Yeah,
it's an aluminum case.
Aluminum, and it has an ion exchange front, but all of them now have the new sapphire and black ceramic back with the.
So that was a theory. Some people who said, "Oh no, I'm going to get the stainless steel because that one doesn't scratch as much." They're the same now, same glass in both.
The back is the same. The front is still ion exchange on the aluminum and sapphire on the steel. So the glass is still the crystal is actually better on the steel still on the front.
Okay. So I took a chance. I got the aluminum because I figure, well, now that I'm getting them every year,
yes,
I might as well spend as little as possible. So
that's my approach.
That's interesting. I wonder. We'll see if it scratches. I don't think it'll scratch. I think it'll be all right. We'll see. Let's take a break. Then your picks, my friends. Our show today brought to you by Quicken Loans, best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years in a row, according to J.D. Power. And I think we know, especially in a service business like this, you want a company that's customer-focused, and Quicken Loans absolutely is. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage in the first place. An entirely online mortgage approval process is fast and easy. No visit to the bank, no visit to the attic to get paperwork or calls to your former employer. That's embarrassing for pay stubs. No, they get it all for you. They do it all. It's easy. They call it the power buying process. You do it right now if you want at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. You can even go on your phone. You'll answer a few simple questions. And within just a few minutes, they'll check your credit and give you pre-qualified approval. That happens right away. Then, within 24 hours, they will verify your income, assets, and credit. They'll do this all without any intervention on your part in most cases and give you a verified approval. Now, you got a letter. You can show the seller of your house and say, it says, they're good for it. It's put you right up at the front of the line like a cash buyer. That's really good stuff. But the best part kicks in then, because once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. See, Quicken Loans noticed interest rates are starting to ratchet up, and no one needs that kind of anxiety when you're making the most important purchase of your life. It's challenging enough to say one-car garage, two-car garage, but to worry that maybe interest rates will go up and this house is going to cost you tens of thousands of dollars more by the end of the loan, that's no good. So Rate Shield approval locks your rate for up to 3 months while you shop, up to 90 days. If rates go up, and you know what, chances are, it depends how long you take, but they probably are going to go up, your rate locks. It doesn't go up. If rates go down, your rate will go down. So you win either way. It's great. Exactly what I mean when I say they're customer-focused, and that's why they're America's largest mortgage lender now. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Rocket Mortgage is an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket, it's easy. Just remember this, rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Go there now, set up your account. You'll be ready when that perfect house comes along. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week.
One of my favorite photo apps got a nice upgrade just this week. Aurora HDR, the 2019 edition, has just been released, and it is an amazing, amazing app. It is, as you can guess, in a app that assembles HDR images, but it kicks it up another notch by applying, I hate to use the word because it's such a buzzword, but smart intelligence to understand what this scene is, understanding that if you're going to do a landscape with like a vibrant sunset, there's a way to process it via HDR so it does not look like a really horrible like Las Vegas strip type of HDR thing. The results are much, much more natural, preserving details, preserving color. If you want to go all wacky, it will let you do that. But the ability to take 2, 3, 5, 7, however many frames or shots you took and combine them into something that is way, way bigger and better than the sum of its parts, and also control the final look. It's just really wonderful. And the other thing is that even when you're talking about it's not just people think HDR is just for people who have a camera on a tripod and take multiple exposures. That's not true for a couple of reasons. Number one, because you no longer really need a tripod. A tripod is optimal, but an app like Aurora HDR can automatically align these images so well that it doesn't look funny or weird or in any way. That's reason one. But reason number two is even when you just feed it one picture, like one picture you took off of your phone, it's such an easy and direct way to explore the tone and the details that are hidden inside that picture and get a custom look that looks way, way better than the original JPEG. It's such an interesting tool to play with. Like it can really take processing it with the Aurora HDR can basically take what would have been maybe a half hour in Lightroom or Photoshop adjusting all of these little tone sliders and just say, well, we basically faked an underexposed version and faked an overexposed version, and we've combined all three of those, and how does that look? And you have to say, that looks wonderful. Thank you very much. Please spit that out as a JPEG that I can put onto Instagram now. It's not cheap. It's $100, but when it comes to advanced tools like this, I tend to think of it as, whereas in a previous era, if I wanted to take better pictures or do some things I wasn't able to do before, I might automatically think, oh, well, I'm going to buy a new lens, or I'm going to buy a new shutter release or cable release. Really, the money that you can spend on just a really good piece of software, $99, will give you so much more experience and so much more results for your photography than even a $200, $300, maybe even $400, or rather, excuse me, it'll give you the same sort of experience. So it's not really a lot of money when you think about what you'll be able to do, not just with the pictures that you'll take after you buy it, but returning to pictures that you took a year ago or even 5 or 10 years ago. So very high recommendation. I bought like last year's version. I've been using the new version in demo mode for free. I'm going to probably pay the upgrade fee because the results over last year really are noticeable and very, very much appreciated.
This is the one Trey Ratcliffe worked with them on. So you think it's worth the that's really my question, because I too own it. $59 for me for upgrading. Do you think it's worth it?
I think it's worth it because not only because this year, I've sort of like set a challenge for myself to do more like fine art sort of, let's print this, let's get a really nice studio print made and see how well it looks. But also because I've been taking like lots of what I hope to be interesting pictures for years, and fun and interesting to reapply new algorithms to old pictures, and for me, I think it is worth the $59. For a new user who's never had an app like this, I think it's definitely worth the $100 the next time you think you've got some money to spend to amplify your toolkit. I think it's very much worth it. I have noticed much nicer results after upgrading than before, and unfortunately I'm liking it too much, so I might wait a month before before I upgrade, particularly because I'm probably going to be writing some checks to Google this month for new hardware, but I'm definitely going to upgrade.
Yeah, Yeah, I love it. I use it all the time. And it's got a Lightroom plugin if you're a Lightroom user. Yeah. I think a little bit easier, probably a little bit better than Photoshop as your HDR.
It's a must. Tool. It's a must have.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're doing photography and you're doing anything with landscapes, then you want to look great.
This is from Skylum, SKYLUM.com. It's the old Mac Fun. They rebranded when they made Windows versions. Their Luminar is supposed to have a digital asset management feature.
It's coming.
Yeah, it's been coming all year.
Well, they're going to get 1.0 of a feature. They have to get it right. It can't suck.
Good. Yeah, that's 2.0, one thing you can't.
2.0 can suck because they've already produced a good 1.0, and people will give them 6 months' time to fix it. Right. But 1.0, it has to say why you're not going to use Lightroom if you're going to be using an asset manager.
And when you're doing asset management, losing people's photos is very
not
serious.
A good thing.
Yeah. So this is not a place to screw up. It's what we would call fissionable material.
Skylum, SKYLUM.com. Alex Lindsay.
So, a long time ago, before Apple had an iPad, I had this idea of a tablet that you put in your kitchen.
Yeah.
Because all I was interested in was I like to cook and I like to explore cooking. Like I don't cook because I'm not like a cook. I like the technology of cooking and the process and learning how to cut and do the things that I do. And so it gives me something to do that I don't have to think about technology. But I like using the technology, as people have seen. So, but I always thought it would be great if you could just follow these great instructions. Like you have a complex thing you have to cook. And they're just going to give me a list of what to go buy, then show me how to do it. And then, of course, the next step was and talk to the pan. Tell the pan what temperature it should be. Like, you know, just sort that out so that I can figure it out.
Not talk to the hand.
No.
Talk to the pan. Okay.
Talk to the pan. And so, I was like, wouldn't it be great if you could have a pan? But that would be really hard. Well, it turns out that Heston, who's in Napa, these guys are like actually local, Heston has this thing called the Heston Q, and I actually posted in the notes a picture of me cooking with it. So that's
you can
actually
talk to the pan.
So here's the deal: the iPad, this iPad actually, will it connects to the pan. It gets the temperature from the pan. So you're following it now. Number one is the videos on how to do this are the best videos I've ever seen. I mean, really well done. They are. Exactly. If I had done them, it's exactly the way I would do them. They're short. They're concise. They're exactly what you need to know.
Oh, you need to use their special burner, the induction burner.
Yeah. You have to use
it's a stove and a pan
separately. I think you buy when you buy
computational
a pan,
entrees. Is that where we are?
Anyway, but you go buy the stuff.
Oh God.
This is going to be an expensive show for
300.
So it is. It is so awesome. So anyway, so it's great instructions. It is, and you just push the little thing, and it just shows you what to do next. And even if I know how to cook, I was like, I know how to cut onions. I was like, well, how are they having it cut? And then I'd cut it that way, and I'd follow along. And then they show you how to chop the different pieces. Then they just say, just connect your pan. And it just starts, it preheats the pan while you're doing that. And then you just throw the stuff in.
Does it keep, like, the oil from ever burning and things like that? Is it smart enough?
I followed the instructions and it was a great meal. Like it was like, that's great. It's like Blue Apron on steroids, you know, and because you're just going to Whole Foods and picking up or Safeway or whatever, and picking up the food that is in the list. And what I like about it is that it's not just because I lean on sous vide a lot and it even has a whole sous vide section, by the way.
Oh, nice.
So it's like, if you want to do this with sous vide, here's the section on how to cook meals with sous vide and the pan. But it just takes out, I find that there's a huge, even if you follow in instructions, the temperature of the pan or the temperature of the pot is one of the big things that is really hard to manage. And it makes a huge difference in how things cook. Yeah. It turns out it's like I think it's the missing piece, you know, to figure it out. Now, it doesn't mean that I always want to do it this way. I mean, I definitely want to use regular pans. I've got, you know, but the what I love is that, okay, just take that variable out of the situation. Show me exactly what I'm supposed to do so that I can create, so I can explore. I can go wander out and make. I made chicken, let's say cacciatore or whatever, but I don't know how to make that. And it was a lot of.
You don't even know what it's called.
No, I don't. I was like,
but I don't know what it was, but it was good.
Yeah, it was. But all I, what I mean is,
actually, I love chicken cacciatore. I would love to make chicken cacciatore.
That was. But the thing was, is that I didn't know all the little bits and pieces and where to put it, and it just showed you exactly how to do it. And it just came out, and I didn't have to think about it. Now, it did take a while to put it together, but it was But the point was, is that I felt like I was on rails. Now I'm making it a couple times, and then I'm going to want to make it myself, and then I'm going to want to change things. But it really, look at the angles are great. The production's really well done. It's it was easy to follow, and it was just the thing that I thought would be great 10 years ago. I finally, you know, this is finally someone who actually did it. And so I felt like the full disclosure is they lent me one because I sent it because I was doing that one on cooking at the last Screensavers, the new Screensavers.
Yeah.
It didn't come in time to show it there, but
finally something Stacey Higginbotham doesn't have.
Yeah. So, but I don't think I'm going to be able to let him have
it's
it back.
$500.
It's, you know, but it's just fun. It's fun.
So I'm trusting you. You steered me right with the toilet that washes my butt.
And the sous vide.
You steered me right in that.
See? So this is just another.
Talk about your end-to-end solutions.
Uh-huh. All right. There you have it. Heston Q, HESTANCUE.com. Smart cooking system. Inductive burner included.
Yes.
It has to be. So they.
And then they have
turning the burner up and down.
And they have a pot, too, that once you have the burner, I don't think you have to.
Get the pot, too.
You can get the pot. And then I don't have the pot.
Oh, actually, the pot sounds good. I'll have to go back here.
I know the pot's
coming.
I'm going
to add the pot to my shopping cart.
There you go. Because I had the pan. I keep on seeing ones. Now you can search. Say only show me pan, only show me pot. So you don't have to look at them because I just kept on going. Oh, there are some
selling the
pot
yet. Mm-hmm. I don't see the pot on the site. Just the pan.
I think it's in there somewhere. But anyway,
I just want to say that I picked up like 4 or 5 pieces of almost new all clad cookware at an estate sale
that's
of the weekend
nice
for $30.
So good.
That's all
and
I'm saying.
Broken in.
Yes.
Already
broken barely
broken in.
It was somebody's cottage that they were only using like 2 months out of the year, and so I think they just basically when they bought it like 5 years ago, they must have just like sat down Amazon saying I need pots, great, what's the best pot? Buy pots, towels, I need towels, and then so I came in like a scavenger. I've been intending to buy all clad for upgrade my cookware for a while, and now I have. I'm so happy.
So good.
I have my omelet pan is all clad. It's seven layer all clad, and it's.
I'm not ridiculing like your recommendation. I'm saying that the first time you upgrade from like cookware that is perfectly fine, or to the good stuff. When you realize that I use this saucepan, I use this sort of like frying pan, I've got other stuff, but that's the stuff that's like in the daily rotation, and you say, you know what, I'm going to spend good money on a really good one of those saucepans, and I'm going to spend some good money on a frying pan, and then you realize that, oh my God, it has no hot and cold spots.
I know, that's
heats up so it holds its heat really nicely. And
what actually got me really sensitive to it was a laser measure when I realized that on some of my pans it was, you know, they seemed really good, but I was like, couldn't figure out why I wasn't getting the right cooking, but it was that there was a 200 degree difference between the center and the outer edge. I was like, that's not gonna work.
I gotta tell you, when I saw your segment on Twit, I thought I should buy a laser temperature scanner.
$15.
I'm going to do that like right now because I haven't done just the idea of I cook like my mom. Like I know from what the oil does on the pan when the pan is right. My cast iron skillet is ready for eggs, and that's okay. That's certainly fine, but you kind of like empirical evidence because sometimes you're in someone else's kitchen or you've got all burners going and you're using a pan you don't really use before because it's in the back of the shelf. So for $15, it seems like, yeah.
And when you sample it all the time, you get a sense of it. Like I like to make crepes at 405 degrees. I like to make omelets at 340 degrees. I like, you know, like, I know what those all those temperatures are because I'm constantly sampling and going, oh, that burned or that went a little too fast or that went too slow. And so it's that constant exploration of it. It makes it fun. I'm in DC. We had an apartment. We have an apartment in DC so that I don't have to pay hotels. And the first thing I got for it was a thermometer. Mm. like laser thermometer. Go. I was like, I can't cook without this. I don't know.
Renee Ritchie, anything I should spend money on?
I chose something just to restore your smile, Leo, after this incredibly hard show.
Yes.
They have a new bundle. There's a Pokemon Let's Go game coming out, which is Nintendo trying to get a little bit of the Pokemon Go fire back into the traditional franchise and platform. So basically, you can bring in your Kanto Pokemon from Pokemon Let's Go. You can play with them on the Nintendo Switch. You can also get a Pokemon only available on the Switch game, which people think is going to be Melton, and bring that back to the Pokemon Go game. So if you don't have a Nintendo Switch yet, you can get a special Pikachu and Eevee bundle with controllers and, you know, branding and all that. If you do, you can just get the game. And if you want to have a little bit of Pokemon sort of fun on a bigger platform, you can, you know, knock yourself out. There you go.
Thank you. I bought a nice Apple Watch band.
It is nice. Which one is it?
I got the Nomad. Have you seen it yet?
Ooh, yeah, I love Nomad.
Nice. Yeah, it's leather. It's a Horween leather.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
That is a name that I actually longer. I've got a leather watch band on my watch from 4 years ago, and I've kind of mocked. Oh, Horween. Oh, I got the Horween. And you know what? It looks really great. I would love to have a saddle or a briefcase that looks as good as this 4 or 5 year old Horween leather watch band that I've been sweating into for 4 years.
That's why you buy it, right? Because the leather, not how it looks when you first get it, because actually it's frankly very stiff. But yeah. as time goes by,
it loosens up and it's like becomes like butter, and it gets this patina on it. Yeah. I did say the word sweat, but I'm saying it's not like it ranks or anything like that. But this is
a shell cordovan strap. You know, it takes them 6 months to
make it. Dolphin leather.
Yeah, to make it. It takes them anyway.
Alex Lindsay version has a 9-section steel whip chain hidden inside. But that's a different show.
You're not supposed to talk about that on the show.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do this show every Tuesday right after iOS Today, usually about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That'd be about 1800 UTC. If you want to watch live, you can. A couple of ways you can watch live. You could be in studio. We had a halfway through the show, we gained a studio audience. Niall and Olivia from Mesa join us. Hello, guys. Thank you. Niall, did you drag Olivia here? Yeah. She's your teenage daughter? Yeah. Are you looking at colleges? No? Just, yeah? All right. Poor Olivia. hey, you didn't have to, you weren't here for the whole show. So there's a blessing there. Unless you're staying for security now. Oh, dear. I'm so sorry. Anyway, if you want to be here in the studio, we'd love to have you. Actually, we really like having a studio audience. All you have to do is email tickets@twit.tv. It's free, but you do have to be in the Petaluma area. Make your way here, and we'll put a chair out for you. You can also watch live anywhere in the world, twit.tv/live. And if you do that, please join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. You can subscribe to anything we do at our website, twit.tv. In the case of this show, it's twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly. Download episodes there, audio or video. You can also subscribe. We have a subscribe page, twit.tv/subscribe, that has links. Or find your favorite podcast application. Type in Mac Break Weekly. I bet you you'll find us. Thanks for joining us. But now, my friends, it's time to get back to work, because break time is over.